Oh, okay.
She need to continue.
Yeah, before we do that, I apologize. I'll finish reading the 12 traditions. And the, did she read these? Right, okay. Understanding these traditions comes slowly over a period of time. We pick up information as we talk to members and visit various groups. It usually isn't until we get involved with service that someone points out that personal recovery depends on inner unity, and that unity depends on how well we follow our traditions. The 12 traditions of NA are not negotiable. They are the guidelines that keep our fellowship alive and free. By following these guidelines in our dealings with others and society at large, we avoid many problems. That is not to say that our traditions eliminate all problems. We still have to face difficulties as they arise, communication problems, differences of opinion, internal controversies, and troubles with individuals and groups outside the fellowship. However, when we apply these principles, we avoid some of the pitfalls. Many of our problems are like those that our predecessors had to face. Their hard-won experience gave birth to the traditions, and our own experience has shown that these principles are just as valid today as they were when these traditions were formulated. Our traditions protect us from the internal and external forces that could destroy us. They are truly the ties that bind us together. It is only through understanding and application that they work. And now we're going to ask Cynthia M. from the D.C. area to come and be our first speaker.
I'm Cynthia. I'm an addict.
Hi, Cynthia.
Hey. This is a good topic for me. I want to first thank my high power for allowing me to endure through all the cunning experiences of my disease. See, I know I'm an addict. You know, you understand? And I know I suffer from a disease. Y'all told me there has no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and then recovery is impossible. It also says that I suffer from a fatal, cunning. You know, the third edition says insidious. You understand? Progressive. So it's always growing with me. You understand? And you talking about somebody who's been in Narcotics Anonymous since June 16th, 1987. So my first convention at the Chesapeake Tomic region is the very second one from the first one that they ever had. So that's how long I've been here. So I can share my experience, strength, and hope in here. You know, I have 17 years clean, and I've used for 16 years. So my clean time has outweighed my using. You know, let me qualify, because I want to say, when they asked me to share on self-deception, you know, I thought about the disease. The first thing I thought about was the results of active using, you know, the rationalization, justification, the distrust of others, the dereliction, isolation, degradation. You know, these things right here, I lived in recovery. I lived it before I even got to recovery. You know, you're talking about a little girl, you know, who was scarred like at 4 years old, because you're talking about, I am the middle child, right, of my family, right? I got an older sister, older brother, and a younger sister at the time, right? The youngest sister, we 4 years apart. So for 4 years, I was baby girl. I'm going to tell you where mine started at, where I can remember where it started at, and where I said to myself, they're going to hurt me like this? Oh, no, I'm going to get him hell. You don't understand? And it was because I suffered from a defect of jealousy at 4 years old. I mean, I was baby girl. Come here, Cynthia, pick you me up, gave me all attention. All of a sudden, my younger sister got born. It was like, grow up. You know what I mean? Sit on the couch. You know what I mean? You're no longer baby girl. I couldn't handle that at 4 years. I was like, what in the world's going on here? And my mind said, I'm going to get my attention one way or the other. See what I'm saying? So you talking about I rationalized right then and there how I was going to carry my thing. And I was defiant, rebellious to the core. Then as I'm growing up, I'm watching my parents raise us. I had both of my parents in my household, right? And they raised us up in church, right? And I saw how my older sister and my oldest brother was being disciplined. And I said, well, I'm going to take my beating like a champ. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm going to do what I want to do. See, I was defiant from the core. Way before I picked up a drink or drug. I picked up a drink or drug when I was 10. Right? I was 198 pounds, wool size 10 shoe. So y'all know, back in the day, all I had to do was put a wig on, dress up. I can go get the cases of this and, you know, fifths and quarter and half a G's of that. At 10 years old, I was getting drunk and having parties in the basement, crap games. We was cutting dope and we was doing our thing at 10 years old. So I started very early, very early. You're talking about somebody stopped growing emotionally at 10. And I'm talking about never wanting to be who I was in my household. They made me go to church. And I couldn't understand. My birthday is March the 2nd. I was born in 1961, so I'm 44. I look good, don't I? Mm-hmm. Y'all go ahead and give it up. Y'all go ahead and give it up. You know.
Work it out.
And I can remember, right, you know, having a resentment because I never could get a birthday party, but in the third, you know, second or the third week, they throwing parties for they, you know, for their friends. I'm talking about my mother and my father. You understand what I'm saying? I didn't like that as a child. Because I had girlfriends and little guys that I hung out with whose parents, you know, threw them birthday parties. Do y'all know, I didn't realize that my birthday was on bill week. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that until after I got the Narcotics Anonymous. You understand what I'm saying? You know, I told her the resentment that long. See, denial is one of my biggest character defects. Denial. Man, when I don't want to do something, I jump up in that zone like it is like nothing to it. You understand? And I want to say, as a child, rationalizing. You know, I was 198 pounds, but I said right then and there, oh, no, I'm slim, and I look good at 198 pounds. I had flat blubbers all over the place. See, so I was justifying, you know, rationalization. It said we justify the most outrageous sort of nonsense to justify our using. See, I'm a give some of this deception to the disease, you know, because I know that's some areas that I fight in. That's where I self-deceive myself, because it says if we're not arresting our disease, right? If we're not arresting it, then we're dying. See, and it's something about my walk. Let me tell y'all something. When I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I was so tired. I have remember asking God personally. I went straight back to the altar where my mother and them showed me how to pray. And I went to the altar, and I remember going to God, and I said, if this all life got to offer me, you could kill me now. I was ready to go. I wasn't ready to kill me, but I sure wanted him to take me. I was at that point of despair in my life, you know, because I had achieved a journeyman's license as a carpenter. I had built half a D.C., and I was making big money and couldn't do nothing with it but get high. The getting, the using, the finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. I did that. Half of my check was gone before I even got paid. Mm-hmm. And it ain't take for 3 hours for the rest of it to go.
That's right.
And I did that for 8 years. So I don't understand, you know, I can't even comprehend or let's say I can't even identify with a person, say they come in here for, you know, 30 days or 90 days and crack ran them in here. I did that 8 years straight. So I'm not a like Ace in Narcotics Anonymous. And I really would appreciate it if people would just let me go through my process, even with 17 years clean. Because I still fight the same disease that I had to fight when I surrendered to coming here from day one. That thing checks in with me. Y'all don't know, I wasn't even afraid to get up in front of this podium and share. Because you don't even know what I had to go through. I knew I was toting a message. Because Friday, when I got off work, Friday, all hell broke out against me. I had to pick my daughter up. Her father was attacking me over the phone. You know what I mean? When I got to the hotel, they took 2 days of monies out of my account and told me they ain't get but one. So I had to pay another $100. I mean, you know, it was like one thing after another. Every store I went in, folks were snapping at me. I said, this devil is a liar. I said, he tried to confuse me. God got some people he gonna help up in that ring. I'm told the message. I knew I was. So when I got here, I'm just going to say what I got to say, do what I got to do so I can sit down. I have really gotten my help while I've been in here. I didn't really take it personal when they asked me to do this topic because I know what it feels like to go into a relationship with 3 different women, pack my stuff up, pack my things and move with them. The 3 different women, 3 years straight. And wind up in the street with all 3 of them. 1 year after another. Go in with the intentions of, I love you.
Bye.
But about time I finish, bye-bye now, I got to go. You understand what I'm saying? Enemies, you know, once you get into the thing and you see it ain't working, you know, man, I had friends in recovery. I said, look, this ain't working. I got to go. I got to pack. They said, wait, didn't I tell you not to go, Sam? I'm one of them ones, man. I just jump into stuff.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? You know, I mean, you know how boxers get in the ring and they be all like this. I'm like that with my disease. You know what I mean? A Russian roulette. 1 minute, oh, praise the Lord. Hallelujah. And then the next minute, I'm acting cold crazy. You know, and I get tired of being like this. I'll be asking God, man, when will this ever be over? When will I get to a point where I just stop deceiving myself? When will I consistently continue to walk in the spiritual path that he's called me to walk in, which is the principles of Narcotics Anonymous? See, I'm one of them persons, man, that I can walk. I did 7 years of no relationship, nurturing my daughter, raising, you know, working the steps, being alone, no sex. Man, after 7 years, I was ready to turn all that in and say, shit, I got to give me some pussy. I don't know. I'm going to tell y'all, I'm just going to tell y'all the truth. I don't know how to go around it. I don't know how to sugarcoat it. This went where it was at after 7 years of walking, you know, really walking. I mean, after my 8th year, I was seeking God more, and I chose to, you know, do this. And when I did it, man, 7 years, my mother had died. You know what I mean? I had lost my house. You know what I mean? I had to relocate my daughter against my will with her father because I knew I was getting ready to live from pillar to post in recovery because I hadn't banked no money to move into another place. I'm talking about all this hit me at once, and the disease checked in again and said, oh, baby girl, you got 16 years clean. You can't go up in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous and tell them you right here. And at that point, I was at a point of despair. But I remember I had to look back and I said, man, when I came in Narcotics Anonymous, I ain't had no place to, you know, I ain't had no place with my name on it. I had to talk to myself. I'm talking about even when you get caught up in the grip, you know, you got to find some hope somewhere. And I remember saying to myself, when I started in this thing, I ain't had nothing but a truck and a trade. You understand what I'm saying? So when I lost that house, like, huh, I can get me another house. Matter of fact, I'm going to give me a better house.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I know God going to allow me to build my house. I'm a carpenter. You understand what I'm saying? So, I mean, I had to just let the mask go, man. I went into the home group. I'm from the Mass Must Go. My home group is the Mass Must Go. And I remember a couple days before my anniversary, I just stripped myself. I stripped myself, you know, because that's the only way I know how to get freedom in here. You know what I mean? They say defects that is in the dark, that is exposed to light, you understand? You get better, right? See, there's certain things I practiced in those 16 years that I know worked, like prayer.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? Like calling my network and telling them exactly where I was at. There's some folks that saw me walk through my situations in recovery And they know it's only by the grace of God that I'm still standing. See, a lot of things I've been through, some people used to. So I don't take it for granted the power that God has bestowed upon me to get through, you know, my situations. I ain't want to stand here. But I know as long as I allow him to use me, my life going to get better. I can't keep what I have unless I get it away. See, so when they asked me to do this topic, you know, I ain't even, man, I have been through so much in recovery, man. And right now, you talking about we at a convention where dreams come true. First of all, I'm a very high esteemed person when I set myself up to do things. Right, but when I hit bottom, I hit bottom. When I hit hard, when I go down, I go down. You know what I mean? And right now, I'm in a solution. You know, God has, I believe right now, standing here today, that I'm ready to go and achieve the dreams that I've always wanted. See, I know what it's like to say in recovery, you know, I want to be a better person or I want to be a better mom. You understand? And sacrifice my desires to raise my child. I know what that's like. You understand what I'm saying? And I'm reaping the benefits of that today. I have a wonderful daughter. You know, she's here with me. And, man, she an honor roll student. I can go to PTA meeting and the teachers will say, you ain't even got to come see me. She's great, you know. So I know I'm blessed in certain areas, but it's a whole lot of areas I got to continue to work on. And one of the things I got to continue to be, you know, obedient to my high power. See, when I take my focus off of what my high power wants me to do and go and pick up my disease all over again, I make a mess out of my life. And I don't know, I don't only hurt me, I hurt anybody that come in contact with me. You know, and right now, man, I'm just willing one more time to say, God, do for me what I can't do for myself. One more time, I'm saying, just for today. See, I'm one of the ones, I gotta really keep it simple this time. Because, you know, you talking about with years of recovery hitting bottoms clean in areas like dereliction. See, I got all the way to my dreams. One of my dreams was to have my own company, right? And to have my own home, right? I got there. I got into a situation where I was being discriminated on my job. I was in a foreclosed situation, you know, and I got consumed with fear. You know what I mean? And it was like, man, I don't want to lose everything I worked for. But I had to let it go. And I hurt behind it. I hurt behind it. You know, because I worked for it. It wasn't like somebody gave that to me. You know, I did 70 hours a week to get some of that stuff I had. You know, but I realized things don't make me. I realized that God had implanted some principles in my life that I could stand whether I had those things or not. And it's so sad because it's people, certain people who saw me in my situation and couldn't realize that I was at peace. Why? Because I had a relationship with my God. And I know how to look at me and say, girl, this is where you made a mistake, and you need to get it right. So you got to be able to do that. I mean, we won't fall short. Our literature tells us that. You know what I mean? We're fighting a disease. You understand what I'm saying? That has results. You know, degradation. Who wants to really lose everything they had? Tell me. You know, and have to start all over again. Who really want to live like that? You know what I mean? And no, I ain't like it. I was angry with God. I'm just coming out of that one. I had to really confess where I was caught up, man. I was angry with God. One, I was angry with him, took my mom. I lost my sister, right? I had to go through that discrimination, even though I won that case. I mean, look what I lost. You know, I'm relocating all over again. You understand what I'm saying? I was angry that I had to allow my daughter to move with her father. I know her father's not a bad man, right? But you're talking to somebody who was a trick. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't my man. You know what I'm saying? We never had a relationship. I tricked with him 3 days and got pregnant. You know what I mean? And I had to look at that and say, I'm not killing this baby. I have to become a mother and deal with this. You know? But I had to look at it for what it was. I was tricking. And on top of that, I was a lesbian. Living a lesbian lifestyle, right? Aggressive. Okay? When I came back in the rooms with the stomach, baby, they was like, Simp, what? What? And I said, I saw the man that I desired. You know what I'm saying? And it, I mean, that was shocking to me. You know, to have to strip myself like that. You know, and I grew in that area. I'm talking about growing pain stuff. I mean, real life woman. You either going to be a woman at it or you going to be a girl at it. I had to do some women stuff. You know what I'm saying? And, man, today I'm allowing my higher power this time. You know, I'm taking my time because I don't, you know, the next, you know, level that I go on, I want to stay. I don't want to have to lose it and get it back again. So I'm asking him for clarity. I'm asking him, I'm talking about my higher power, whatever's in my way that will cause me to sabotage my own life, remove it. I mean, strip me to the core. This is what I'm asking my higher power to do, right? Now, mind you, right, he didn't set me up where I could get all or whatever I lost back, right? But the thing is, he even set me up with direct deposit. I only had to worry about getting the money in my hand. And that's been working for me. It's been working. You know what I mean? I just had a trip. You know, even though I had things that happened in my life, you know, I just came back from Vegas. He do stuff like that for me. All expenses paid. And they allowed me to represent. You know, they allowed my job allowed me to represent, you know, Washington, D.C., Virginia, Maryland, West Virginia, and Las Vegas. Free. You know what I mean? Second time. All expenses paid me to go. You know, so it's some areas of my life where he's using me. You know what I mean? And I have to move out the way and let him do it. See, I'm one of the ones, I know God got a purpose for my life, and I'm scared. I'm really scared. That's why I keep running back to old ways of thinking, acting, and feeling, because I don't want to continue to allow him to take me where he want me to be. Because, see, sometimes it's lonely on that road. Even though Narcotics Anonymous say we are never alone, it's some times where you have to really work on you and be alone to let God do for you what you can't do for yourself. See, sometimes he separates you and sets you aside to work on you. You know, even though you got to still maintain your relationship with your sponsor. Still call. He separates you sometimes. I'm talking about my God. You know, so he can get out of me what he wants me to do. So right now, y'all, I'm just grateful to be here. I'm glad that I was able to speak at this convention for my first time in 17 years. You know what I mean? I know I qualify. You know, I'm a predecessor today, so I can't act any kind of way, and I realize that. So I'm gonna keep coming back. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Cynthia, for sharing. And now we're gonna have Donald W. from the DC area.
I'm an addict named Donald. And I want to thank the God of my understanding for allowing me to be alive and in another Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And, You know, it's funny how similar we are in this program. You know, they say that if you stay around long enough, you'll hear your story. I've been in meetings all day. I've heard my story about 16 or 17 times. And I'm truly grateful to the area for allowing me to speak today. And when I first heard about the topic, I called my sponsor and I asked him about the topic. And I'm like, what can I share? And he just started rattling off stuff. And by the end, I knew that this was right where I was supposed to be. And, you know, as the addict shared before me, I knew about delusion, about deception, long before I got into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, because it's really about believing something that's not really there. And when I was real young, I'm a middle child too. When I was real young, I was back in Cincinnati. I grew up in Cincinnati, and I had two older sisters and one younger sister, and then I had a couple of brothers. We lived in a house where there was my grandparents lived in a house, and then my aunt and her three daughters lived in a house, and everybody had their little group. All the girls, all my aunts was in one group, my grandmother and grandfather was in one group, my mother and father was in one group, and all the girls was in another group, and I was by myself. And because I was by myself, and because I was jealous about being by myself, I created a friend in the wall, y'all. I created this friend in the wall, and the friend became so real to me. Every day when I got home from school, I was at the wall talking to my friend, and I kept talking to my friend. I couldn't stop talking to my friend. That's the obsession and the compulsion. Long before I came to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And I kept doing that. I did it so much that they took me to a psychiatrist. They thought I was crazy. I went to the psychiatrist, and they just said he got a big imagination. But that was the delusion. That's when it started. And I always felt different because I was pretty smart, but I lived in a community where you had to be hard. You had to show up. You had to fight. It's a brother here now who was the National Golden Gloves champion. Came from my neighborhood. And that's how it was in my neighborhood. You had to show up. You had to be tough. But I was smart. But I couldn't go back to my neighborhood and be smart. So I was living all these illusions for a long time before I got to the room of Narcotics Anonymous. When I was 15 years old, I heard about recovery. I heard about Al-Anon because my father suffered from this disease. Actually, he died from this disease. But I heard about Al-Anon, but I couldn't get it then because something was missing, and they talk about it in the literature. It's the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. I couldn't get it then because there was no other addict that was helping me understand this program. And then, you know, I wanted to be different all my life. All my life, I wanted to be somebody that I wasn't, and I didn't have a father figure. My father, I remember my father used to come home sometimes, and my father, he suffered from the disease of addiction, and sometimes he would come home and he wouldn't make it inside. He pulled a car into the driveway, but he wouldn't make it exactly in the driveway. The car would get parked in the front yard, and he couldn't make it in the house. He would be hanging out of the car. With his legs in the car and his back on the grass. And then the next day I get to the baseball diamond, they be singing Daddy's Home. And that hurt y'all. And that's why I'm qualified to be in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, because all that stuff, all that hurt and all that pain was welling inside me for a lot of years. And I tried to be somebody different because I didn't want to feel that pain. Because every time I did something wrong, my mother said, "You just like your daddy." And I didn't want to be like my daddy. I wanted to be anything but my daddy. And so I tried to be anything but my daddy, and I start creating these illusions. And anybody who I wanted to be around, whatever they wanted me to be, that's who I became. And I continued that for years. For years, I was somebody else. Whatever you wanted me to be, that's who I was that day. And then I went to the Navy. And again, they offered me some recovery in the Navy. But again, it was missing that most important element that we get in here, y'all, the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. And I stayed in the illusion for many, many more years. I had a person who came in my life who was a thug, because I wanted to be a thug, really. But I wasn't no thug. But this guy, I was 18 years old, and this guy was 34. And I was hanging out with this guy, and I wanted to be like him because he was so cool, and I wanted to be cool, and I became cool. People thought I was cool, but I was really scared. I was really terrified. When we was in the after-hours joints and people were shooting and stuff, I was in the corner hiding. But it was dark, and didn't nobody know, but they thought I was a thug because that's who I wanted to be, because this deception, I practiced it all my life, and I got real good at it. I got real, real good at it, and I kept using, y'all. I kept using. I kept trying new things, and finally, I used so bad that my life became utter chaos. At the end of my using, y'all, they talk about it in Who's an Addict. They talk about our living skills being reduced to an animal level. And I'm here to tell you that I understand what they mean when they say that. My living skills was reduced to a level where I was eating out of garbage cans. And I rationalized that it was all right for me to eat out of garbage cans because there was garbage cans at a steakhouse. So that was all right. I wasn't eating out of just any old garbage can. It was at Longhorn Steakhouse. And I got there right when they was closing. And I used, y'all, I lived in abandoned buildings. I was homeless. People showed me how to dress. People gave me whatever food I needed to have for that day. I was living like an animal, y'all. And then I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And I didn't come into the rooms, and I need to tell you that I didn't come into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous brimming with love. It wasn't like that for me, y'all. I came in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous under some deception. I came in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous because I thought I was wanted for murder. And let me go back and tell y'all about that. And before I tell y'all, after I tell y'all this story, I want to tell y'all, ain't no rewards out for me. Because when I share this, people call me the next day, did they get the person? Is that you? And, you know, maybe I can get a couple of $1,000s, but it wasn't me, y'all. But what happened, I was sitting in a park one day because I was homeless, right? And when you sit in the park and you're homeless, there's some predators that ride around. They homosexuals, right? And I'm not a homosexual. I've never been a homosexual. I don't want to practice homosexuality, but when that guy came up to me and he said, I can give you something if you do something for me, it sounded real good, y'all. Because I lived to use and I used to live, and I wanted to use right then. And so we went behind a building, and he got on his knees, and I just started beating him. And all that pain and all that hurt, it came back. And I beat him till he was unconscious, and I didn't know if he was alive or not, and then I ran. First I took his wallet, and then I ran. And then I ran, and the next day I went to the homeless shelter, and there was a poster on the wall, and it looked like me, and the person was wanted for rape and murder. Now, I knew I had raped the guy, but I didn't know if he lived or not. So what I did, y'all, was these people in the shelter, and they was a little bit more healthier than everybody else. They got to eat before everybody else, and it was because they was in this program. And so what I did is I shaved all the hair off my face, and I got into the program. And I made them people believe the deception that I practiced was I made them people believe that I wanted the process of recovery. All I wanted to do was not go to jail for the rest of my life. But a funny thing happened when I got into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I start listening to the people in the rooms. I start seeing people in the rooms that I used to use with. And I really wanted to know how they was using and getting diamonds and getting gold and driving nice cars and getting girlfriends because I couldn't do that. That's what I came into the rooms to find out. But what I found out was I suffered from a disease from which there is no known cure, and a disease that can be arrested. And so what I started doing was doing what they did. I start showing up every day. I start reading the literature. I got a sponsor. I got a home group. I got into service. I got an area service. I did everything that people suggested of me, and life started really showing up for me. And the theme of this convention is dreams do come true. And I'm here to tell you that if you practice the program of Narcotics Anonymous, dreams do come true for real. I'm telling you, everything that I ever wanted started to happen to me in the process of Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm not going to say some things to brag. I'm saying things because I want you to know that if you practice the program of Narcotics Anonymous, everything that you wanted to happen in your life will come true. I got a couple of good jobs. I mean, they made me the director of a program. They made me a director with no education whatsoever. Now, I went to college, but when they gave me the check, I didn't go back no more. And then I went to another college, and I did the same thing because I used that money to use. But they made me the director of the program. And things started happening when I was the director. They gave me a TV show. They gave me a radio show. I had a newspaper, and you got to believe, because I'm an addict and I suffer from a disease that manifests itself in my total self-obsession. Almost every edition of that newspaper had my face on it. And I got all these things, and I was getting, people was asking for my opinion in the newspaper, in the big newspaper, and I was getting to do some other things, some creative things that I like to do. I got to do some stand-up comedy. I got to open for some big people, y'all. You know, I was living the life. I got to open for Monique, the dude the sounds from Police Academy. I got to meet Bernie Mac and Cedric the Entertainer. I was living the life, y'all. I was enjoying it. I was still showing up to meetings every day. Things was happening. It was a wonderful life. I got married. And I know today, when I think about my relationships are always about deception. Because I'm never, the person that I am in a relationship is who they want me to be. And I'm understanding today, after doing some step work, that in my relationships, again, I become the person they want me to be. And I never really choose the person I'm in a relationship with. They choose me. All they got to do is smile at me and say they like me, and I'm off to the races, y'all. And whatever they do, if they eat sushi, whether I like sushi or not, that's what I start doing. If they eat steak, I'm eating steak too. You know, when it really got bad for me was I did that little Black Planet thing. Anybody else do that? Little Black Planet thing. And what I would do is I would get a new profile every week. I read somebody's profile. Whatever they say they like, that's what I put in my profile. I practice in self-deception. I continued to do that. But things was happening good for me, and I'm truly grateful for all the things. And I even started acting, y'all, and I got an Emmy. An addict like me, I got an Emmy. The process of Narcotics Anonymous had helped me get an Emmy. It had helped me do all these wonderful things. And I was helping people. I was sponsoring people. My sponsees was getting sponsees. And it was beautiful for me. But then one day, I stopped. I just stopped. You know, you can only keep what you have by giving it away. And guess what I started doing? I stopped giving it away, y'all. And when I stopped giving it away, it wasn't very soon after that it totally changed. All the deception that I had practiced before, because I had gotten away from that. I had started using the principles of this program, the honesty, the open-mindedness, and the willingness. I started to practice those on a daily basis in all areas of my life. But then, you know, my face was on TV too much, y'all, and I got caught up in that. And they talk about, in the literature, social acceptability does not equal recovery. But I thought it did, because after I got acceptable enough by society, I didn't think I needed y'all anymore. As a matter of fact, I didn't want nobody to know I was an addict. I didn't want nobody to have me identify with being a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And so I got another real good job now. I got a job. They made me director of a national group. And that's when I moved here to Washington. And it really got cool for me then. You know, I got to meet, you know, all those people I saw on TV. I got to have dinner at the president's house. You know, and I was living the life, y'all. But I didn't want to identify with nobody knew me here in Washington, D.C., so I didn't have to show up for meetings. And so I didn't. I didn't show up for meetings. And the deception started coming in, and I start practicing some things that I had gotten away from. I start tricking. And when I picked up the first one, it was just like the dope. One was too many, and 1,000 was never enough. And sometimes I had 2 in the night, and sometimes I had 3 in the night. And they called me at work and all kinds of stuff. And I was caught up, y'all, every day. I was renting cars. I was flying people in. You know, I was caught up. I didn't love myself. And that's what the delusion, the deception is really about. Me not being able to be okay with who I am. Me not having self-acceptance of who I am. And so the only way to get through that is honesty, but I wasn't living honesty. I had gotten away from the how of this program. And so I kept tricking every night. Every night, I'm telling you, every night I was tricking. And I was tricking with the same person for a while. I thought, you know, I was having feelings for this person. That's how bad the delusion got for me. And I thought she had feelings for me, too. She had feelings when I had some money. And that's how bad the delusion got for me. And then, you know, I got restored to some sanity. Because the God of my understanding, he comes to me, and sometimes he comes to me subtly, and sometimes he comes to me a little bit more harsh. And one day, I was tricking. I had just got off a plane. I went back in the parking lot, and I had the woman on my lap, and I seen a flashlight in the window. And it was the D.C. police. And I was immediately restored to sanity right then. But the blessing was, and this is a blessing because there's been so many times in my recovery that I realized that God was there for me, and I didn't even know he was there. Because the officer, he didn't give me a ticket. He didn't take me to jail. He said, man, I know this ain't really who you are. And he let me go. And I need to tell y'all that I've been free from tricking for 4 years now. Right. And by the grace of God, that's something really, really tough for me. Because, you know, women, for me, I grew up around all women. So I need women in my life. And it's really hard for me if I'm by myself not to have a woman in my life. But I'm getting with today a real understanding of who I am and some acceptance of who I am. And that's only through honesty. But some other things happened along the way. And I think when I got restored to sanity, it was to get me back into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous to rebuild that foundation. And you know, I'm truly grateful that happened right at that point because some storms was coming. And, you know, pain is what makes us change in this program. And some pain was coming for me. And I got back into the rooms. I got into a home group. I start showing up every day. I start going to meetings again on a regular basis. I start doing some H&I. And the programs start kicking back in. And those principles start kicking back in. And I started even doing my job better because there was some dereliction happening on my job because I couldn't show up on time because, you know, I was out doing all those other things every night. And so I got a call one day from Cincinnati, and my daughter was sick. And I didn't go right away because I had a big meeting. And the big meeting for me was more important than getting there to see my daughter because, you know, she had just went and I thought she just had a, you know, they told me she had a bad stomach ache. And I'm like, this going to get over pretty soon and I ain't got to worry about it. She's going to be okay because she at the hospital because that's where you get care at, the hospital. So I didn't go right away and I waited. And I waited for a week. And then they called me again and they say, you might need to make some plane arrangements because she's not getting better. But I still didn't go because I had that big meeting that weekend. And then that weekend, while I was in the big meeting, they called me and they said, she's in intensive care. And so I went back to Cincinnati. I flew back and all the way on the plane. I was going through all these, you know. But on that plane ride home, I really got my understanding of the God of my understanding. I was at 30,000 feet, and you know they start speaking, you're now at 30,000 feet, the cruising. And I looked down, and I saw the landscape down there, and I understood right then, that's who the God of my understanding is. Because I could see miles and miles in front of me, and I could see when a bridge was out, and I could see when a car was getting ready to go the wrong way, and I could see all these things, and I understood that that's what God is. He's up there, the God of my understanding, and he sees miles in front of me, and he puts things there to keep me from going where that bridge is out. And that's what he had just done. He had helped me re-get my foundation in this program because the bridge was getting ready to be out. So I went back to Cincinnati, and I went to the intensive care room, and I stayed with my daughter, and I slept there. You know, people came to see me there. Addicts came to share. They brought the program of Narcotics Anonymous to the hospital room. And I stayed there for 3 more days, and she kept getting worse, and she kept getting worse. And then she couldn't breathe, and then she couldn't talk. And she kept getting sicker, and she kept getting sicker. And I kept praying, God, the God of my understanding, we together, God, you can't let my daughter die. Because I love my daughter and I need my daughter, God. And I got clean so I could enjoy my life with my daughter, God. And don't let me get clean and let my daughter go away from me. But the God of my understanding, it's his will. I have no control over that. And my daughter died. And I remember being there when that line started going down. And you know, you see it on TV and you can't really imagine how that is if you're sitting on the other side watching that line. It's getting, the beat is getting fainter and fainter. Then finally the line go across, and she was gone. And I didn't know what to do. And I fell down on my knees, and I said, God, you got to bring her back, or I'm going back to do the things I used to do. But God didn't bring her back. And I lost my daughter. And I was tore up inside. But I had rebuilt that foundation. The first thing I wanted to do, y'all, was use. And I actually ran out of the hospital, and another addict ran and grabbed me. But, you know, death is something we go through in this process. And it never gets easy. I don't care how many years you got. You could have 120 years in Narcotics Anonymous, and if you lose somebody that you love, then it's going to hurt. So I lost my daughter, and for a long time, I got disconnected from the program again. Because God, you know, I done all this stuff. You know, I done came from being homeless and eating out of garbage cans, and I done helped people, and you took my daughter from me? How could you do that, God? How could you do that to me? And I lost my connection with the God of my understanding. And I, for a while, my process kind of got interrupted again. But, you know, I start really, you know, getting into the God of my understanding at that point. And I really reconnected myself to the program. And I know today, you know, today I got 9 years and 8 months. And by the grace of God, I'm really starting to understand the program of Narcotics Anonymous for the first time. Because the first 4 years of my recovery, I think I was getting it, but I didn't get it all the way. I did, you know, all 12 of the steps. But now I'm doing the steps again, and I'm really starting to apply the steps, and that's what it's really about, not just getting the steps and not just doing the steps and not just intellectualizing the literature. It's really about applying the process to your life. And that's what I'm starting to do today, and I thank the God of my understanding. And you know, I'm just now really getting to know. When I came up here and said, I'm an addict and my name is Donald, I could really say that with some confidence because I really know who Donald is today. I'm not practicing the deception anymore. I have some acceptance of who I am. I have some acceptance of my assets and my defects. And I know I have some assets today. You know, and I was so caught up in all that stuff I had gotten in this process. I got a brand new house, a brand new car, a good job and all that. And guess what? 3 years later, all that stuff was gone. I lost the house. I lost the car. I lost the job. I lost my daughter. I lost my daughter. So material things don't mean nothing in this process. And I don't have any more what ifs. I don't have any more, you know, there's nothing that I can use as an excuse to make me go out and use now because I've lost my father in this process. And I have finally, my father's death was really, you know, for the first time I got the opportunity to talk to my father because my father was never around. And when he came home to see who he could beat up that day. And finally, I got the chance to talk to my father. And the irony of it is he couldn't even talk no more. He had throat cancer, so he couldn't talk to me. And the last thing he said to me was, take care of your mama. And then I lost him, too. So death, every year I was losing somebody. So death is not an excuse for me to use. And really, there's no excuse for me to use. And what I do now is my disease attacks me in other ways. My disease attacks me through my inability to be by myself. I'm getting better at that, but I'm not all right at that because I just got through a relationship. I still see the person, but we're not in a relationship. We was living together. And this is the beauty of the program. This is how the God of my understanding works. About a year ago, I have another son. He was in Cincinnati. And about a year ago, his mother, who's still in active addiction, lost custody. And guess who they gave custody to, y'all? So I lost my daughter, but I have my son in my life. And that's a real tough thing for me because I get angry at him sometime, and I'm just starting to identify what that anger comes from. It's from my total self-obsession because I got to share with somebody else. That ain't all that all right with me, you know, but I'm developing a relationship with this young brother. And I see a lot of me in him, and that scares me because I know what I went through. But, you know, I'm truly grateful for that, to have my son in my life and be able to be a father today. You know, I went through a lot of things when I was growing up in high school. I was in a lot of stuff. I was on the football team and basketball team and all that. But my father never came to one event that I was at. I try to show up for every event that my son has because I want to do something different today. I want to make sure that my son understands that somebody loves him because that's all I wanted. And that's all most of us really want is somebody to love us. And today I know that if I show up and I'm in my son's life all the time, I can show him that somebody loves him. I'm learning a lot about me in this process. I know that relationships for me, I've never, ever, ever been faithful in a relationship. I left my wife because she cheated on me. But she cheated on me after I had cheated on her multiple times. But it wasn't all right for her to cheat on me. I cheated on her, but it wasn't all right for her to cheat on me. And I've never been faithful in a relationship. But I got this last relationship, I've been almost faithful for 3 years. I just had that one little time, and I can blame that on the disease, right? But I'm truly grateful that I ain't got to, be dishonest and be in that delusion about being a faithful person. And I can be me today in a relationship. When a relationship, because what happens is I be in a relationship and I show up as that person they want me to be, but I get tired of that after a while. So 2 or 3 months later or a year later or whenever it comes, I show up and then the relationship is over because they don't even know who this dude is over here. But I'm grateful that I don't have to do that today, that I can show up in the beginning and the relationship can be okay. And I'm truly grateful that I have a sponsor that I can trust. Because I'm doing my fourth step now, and I shared this with him today, that I've done a couple of four steps in this process, but this is the most honest fourth step I've ever done. Because I truly believe if I share with this man, that he's not going to take that and use it against me in any kind of way. And I'm truly grateful for that, because you need somebody that you can trust in this process. And I truly can trust this brother, and I've been able to really grow since I've been in a sponsor. I've been well sponsored in this program, because I had some sponsors that I would call them and they would start talking about their stuff, and I'm like, well, do I ever get to share about my stuff? And when I was going through my stuff, that's the thing, that the two things that I didn't have was a sponsor, and I didn't give back the program that was freely given to me. I sponsored myself, because I started to believe after I got a lot of stuff that since I had sponsees, I didn't really need a sponsor. And that's a dangerous place to be. And I'm truly grateful that I don't have to be there today. This is a wonderful, wonderful place to be. When you come here, you really understand the fact that recovery is alive. That it's just overwhelming to come here and see so many addicts. And I'm truly grateful for that. I shared at a convention 2 years ago, and I'm grateful that I'm able to stay on the topic today, because I shared, and it was really some self-centered bullshit that I shared, and I'm truly grateful that today I'm able to share on the topic, and I thank the God of my understanding for allowing me to do that today, and I know that my time is up, because I got a little note right here to say my time is up, but I thank y'all for letting me share. I'm an addict named Donald.